That's it. So it's self-congratulatory, like, hey, way to go for doing 100 list episodes or whatever it is and not repeating yourself. But that we don't really have any kind of fact checkers. You just take our words for it.
There's a few people that have listened every week.
Yeah, but I'm going to guess.
Let us know, but they don't remember.
That's the thing. Like, if they've
favorite
listened.
Favorite Ghosts and we've done favorite, like, Haunted House, which, what's the difference between those movies?
I don't know.
What's up? This is Movies On Up. Welcome to the honeymoon from hell. I am Dave, joined by the deli to my Bron, Ryan.
That's apt. I was thinking that I would be like your podcast partner, domestic partner.
Yeah, we have been married to your ears and each other for over 3 years now.
Congratulations.
We are Movies On Up. The tagline for this week, welcome to the honeymoon from hell. If you know what movie that's from, hit us up, moviesonup@gmail.com. Facebook.com/moviesonup or Twitter @moviesonup. If you are correct and we pick you, you win the glorious Movies On Up prize package. We forgot why we were doing it, but our list this week is our favorite movies about married couples.
What's that limited release flick?
It turns out The Overnight is coming out this week, starring Adam Scott, a bunch of funny people. I think Jason Schwartzman. It's about a married couple that stay overnight and have an adult sleepover. I think. I don't know. I haven't seen it. So we're doing married couples because we were just talking earlier. We've done a lot of episodes. And
3 years worth of lists.
We have no ideas for lists left. So we were reaching. This one was tough, though, because it's very broad. Generally, our most interesting lists are the ones that are stupid like this, where there's no real concrete, like, oh, I can narrow this down to this many movies. Because this is everywhere. Every genre. There are a ton of movies out there where some of the characters are married. So this, of all lists we've ever done, I know I've missed movies that I love just by overlooking them, because there were some that I'd come to mind and it's like, oh, were they married in that? Or I'd have to look it up because I couldn't remember if they were just boyfriend, girlfriend or if they were actually married. So I had to do a little bit of more research on these when I did think about it. And I'm pretty happy with where my list did end up going. It's one of the harder ones to come up with because every time I thought I had it, I would come up with about 5 more movies that I wanted to throw on the list.
To me, the ones that I would come up with were more also-rans because they're movies that I like. But this list actually came together very easily. I know I've used, if not all of these movies have appeared on a different list before. At least 4 of them have. And it's because I really like them. So I thought, at least because we're putting it on from a married couple list, maybe I talked about it for a different reason last time. So starting with these from a fresh eye, perhaps, but it's my 5 favorite movies with married couples.
All mine I've talked about, I think, at some point.
I don't feel as bad now.
I left off a couple that maybe we've talked about more often or more recently. Let's get to the list. Ryan, walk down the aisle with your number 5 favorite movie about married couples.
My number 5 is from 2010. Directed by Derek Cianfrance, starring 2 very attractive people, Ryan Gosling and Michelle Williams, it's Blue Valentine. I hate to start off the list on an unhappy note, but for some reason, I actually really seem to like this movie. I've seen it more times than any other movie on my list, which is weird because it's kind of a bummer. I'm not really sure why I like it as much as I do. It's kind of a simple story, just about a marriage falling apart, while somehow the couple involved seems to think that the way to make things right is just to fuck their way back to good. That might not be the soundest plot or idea to save your relationship, but when you look like Ryan Gosling and Michelle Williams, I guess you get a pass. Maybe what I appreciate the most about the movie is that you don't really know what side you're supposed to be on in the breakup. Neither of them seem to be worse than the other one or necessarily giving the other one a catalyst to break up the marriage. It just seems that for whatever reason, it's a square peg in a round hole. It's not really working out. By the time you get to the end and Gosling kind of goes a little bit nuts, maybe at that point he seems to be a bit the antagonist and you might choose sides. But I would think that his behavior then is as much desperation as anything else, which is really what this whole movie feels like. It feels like a last-ditch desperation attempt to save this relationship. The whole motel stay seems to kind of drip of desperation and a little bit of sadness. I think there's only two movies on my list where the couples have kids. Obviously, this is one of them. And I think this is the one that you really want these two to work out because of the daughter. There's not a lot of scenes with Gosling and the kid, but the scenes that they do have together, they're done very well. You can see that, you know, this guy really loves his daughter and wants to continue to be a part of her life. And you're just not really sure by the time we get to the end of the movie if that's going to happen. But you root for them to stay together so that you know that it happens. That's my number five. A real bummer.
This is one of those where I think Stian Frans did a fantastic job, because you nailed it on the head about not knowing who you're supposed to root for. As a viewer, you're kind of put in the position of, say you were a friend of one of them, and over time have, you know, become friends with the spouse too. So when they start splitting up, it's like,
who do you get in the divorce?
You don't want to take sides, and you're almost in the experience of a friend of Ryan Gosling who realizes what he has, and even when he becomes kind of the antagonist, you still want him to end up all right. On my list, all of mine except for one, all of my married couples have children.
Perhaps that's because you have children and I don't.
It's possible, because number five is a somewhat relatable movie, not from the whole plot, but it is about a married couple played by Seth Rogen and Rose Byrne who just had their first baby. It is 2014's Neighbors, directed by Nicholas Stoller. I am a parent, so I have given up all the going out and the stuff, and it's funny to see them kind of going through that phase of their life where they're giving it up, but they're not accepting giving it up yet. And then you have the neighbors next door, a frat moves in, and they so badly don't want to be that married couple with kids. And I thought that was really funny. I almost wish the movie would have went more along that road than going into the pranks. Just seeing them try to fit in, I thought were some of my favorite moments of that movie. Even at the end, when Seth Rogen and Zac Efron kind of have their moment after everything's happened, I just think that movie was a lot of fun to watch. And somebody like Seth Rogen, you expect him to be in a prank war. And fun thing I heard from him when writing that movie was his wife actually had a big part in it, because it was written as Seth Rogen and his friends get in a prank war with the frat next door. And his wife said, like, you don't think I'd want to partake in something like that? So then it turned into Seth Rogen's character and his wife get into a prank battle with the...
Which is a much more appealing... We haven't seen that.
It's far more interesting. He even said that. Like, that gave him a whole new angle and something else. And
Rose Byrne was awesome in this.
She's fantastic. She doesn't do comedy a lot. She may show up on my list a little bit later. But when she does do comedy, she nails it. It's a funny movie, but it's not about being a comedy. Like, as a portrayal of a couple with a baby, I thought it nailed it. And it was really fun to watch them, too.
That scene where they have to milk her, that is one of the greatest things that I've ever seen, and just the puns that come from that. Really good flick. It was one of those second at a drive-in ones I saw. So those are always like,
I love that.
I have the highest
esteem
for those.
There's no expectations.
Yeah, exactly. Like, well, I paid to see, I don't even know if it was like X-Men or whatever. It's like, yeah, that was cool, and now I get to see this for free. So double thumbs up. I like that. If I had done the bro list your way, Neighbors would have been on there. I think that was one I mentioned. Another one that if I had done the bro list your way, my number four would totally be on there. It is from 2009. It's John Hamburg's I Love You Man, starring Paul Rudd, Jason Segel, and Rashida Jones. Admittedly, this one is much less about the relationship between Rudd and Jones. It's more about Rudd trying to relate on a bro level with Jason Segel, or with anyone for that matter. The movie, like I said, could really fit into our past bro movies list, but what I like about this one is they're not married yet, so he's trying to kind of find that balance between the fiance, which was getting all of his time because he had no other friends, to now trying, after kind of being told that he should have some other friends, trying to strike that balance, which I can't really say that I've seen in a lot of other movies. There is always kind of that pull between maybe like the bachelor kind of life and then the married life. But I think this movie does an awesome job in kind of giving equal time to both and making it really kind of central to the plot. In most cases, I think that Paul Rudd is a dude that I'd like to be bros with. And I think it's kind of interesting the fact that he somehow manages to leverage that awkwardness that he has into it's believable that he can't really relate to dudes on any level, which surprises me. He seemed like he'd be a totally relatable guy, and we wouldn't have any problems listening to Rush together.
Yeah, I like this movie. I left it off because I wanted it to be couples that were
married, not
yeah.
just engaged.
But in this movie, like, I love it. It's funny, but there's zero conflict in this movie. There's literally no conflict. The biggest conflict is, oh, Jason Segel helped your business. Like, that's...
It does seem contrived, but the things I like about the movie seem...
I loved it.
I mean, I love Tom Lennon in it. He's really great.
And just at the end where it's like the wedding is the most random accumulation of guys. Yeah, Tom Lennon's perfect in it. I look at a movie like Wedding Crashers, which I've crapped on plenty of times, because I don't feel like they tried to tell a story at all. They just tried to have a funny movie. And I don't think it worked as well for that. But that's what I Love You Man was. I think they cared a little bit more about story, but they didn't care about Act 1, Act 2, Act 3, and like the overall arc. They just made a really funny movie with great characters. My number four, not so much a laugh riot, directed by J.A. Bayona, and the married couple in this is Naomi Watts and Ewan McGregor. It's from 2012. It is The Impossible. Not a comedy like my last one. This one came across my thought process of like, okay, stop thinking about like married couples together and maybe think of what's a good movie with a married couple isn't together. And, you know, as a family man who has four children, like, this movie is gut-wrenching. They're separated right away, essentially. And the whole movie is just that drive of that family of needing to be reunited. And Ewan McGregor, Naomi Watts are fantastic in it. I feel like they both deserved Oscar noms. I think only Naomi got one. But I think Tom Holland kind of stole the show. I think... Of all the performances, I think his kind of topped out, and that's why I kind of want him as the new Spider-Man. They were believable. They were a believable family, and that's where we've been doing Star Wars episodes. This movie starred Hayden Christensen and Natalie Portman. Like, it doesn't work because they're not a believable couple, but you could feel
They'd be more believable in this than they would be in Star Wars.
But you could feel that. Like, they're protectors, but they also need to get back together. And Naomi went through hell in this movie. It's just such a good movie. It's a hard watch. It's one of those that I really enjoy. I'm not watching it when it's on, though. Like, it's not one of those that if I see on the movie channels, I'm going to tune into The Impossible. It's a really, really well-made movie, and it's really good. And it definitely has that strong family dynamic.
Obviously, it's based off a true story. I don't know how close it is to the... I mean, obviously, some things were probably jazzed up for a movie. But it's when you watch it, it's kind of amazing, at least, how close they come to being like reunited on so many different times. It's like, ah, they just missed it. They just missed it. And it gets to the point where you're like, ah, for fuck's sake already.
When this premiered, they did the world premiere
and
with
they were
the family.
In, yeah.
So,
spoiler
mean,
alert.
Yeah. So, I mean, it kind of got a standing ovation after that.
Sure.
It's fucking insane outside.
Speaking of The Impossible, yeah, there's like a...
It was coming down sideways a second ago.
Monsoon out there right now. My number three, I've sort of alternated between, hey, this one's a bummer, this one's funny. Oh, now we're back on the bummer side of the coin. If there is one thing that you can take away from my list... I think it's this one thing, is that you probably shouldn't be movie married to Michelle Williams because it's not going to work out well for you. My number three is, again, starring Michelle Williams, Seth Rogen, and Sarah Silverman. It's Sarah Pauly's 2011 Take This Waltz. This time, I think we do, or at least I do, have a pretty good idea of who the bad guy in this movie is. And you can make the argument that it's the artist that lives down the street or across the street or whatever. No, the bad guy is Michelle Williams as she cheats on the... chicken chef husband of Seth Rogen. And like I said, while you're not really supposed to be Team Gosling or Team Williams and Valentine and Take This Waltz, I think it's pretty hard to identify with Michelle Williams unless you're a hussy, in which case you probably can't identify. This movie, I mean, it's 100% from her perspective, and I'm not really sure if we're ever supposed to fully sympathize and understand her dilemma of kind of being bored with her husband and the idea of, you know, an exciting life with this artist guy. Maybe I'm just a male apologist, or maybe it's because I'm boring, but I think that Rogan, maybe he's boring, maybe he's a wet noodle, but he's sweet. And I think he's completely relatable in that aspect, and that's why I know Dave has a kind of a problem with this movie too, because of the way that she sort of acts. Not to always keep relating it back to Blue Valentine, but I did root for her and Gosling to stay together in that one. This one, I don't even think that I really want him to take her back at any point. Once it kind of comes out that she's a hussy, you're just like, you know what? You don't need that. Come on, brother. Pick yourself up by your bootstraps and get the hell out of there. Granted, this is another story about the end of a relationship, which may be a theme here. But the reasons that this one goes on the skids are easier to understand and digest. They're fully out there. There's the conflict that I didn't have in my number four. On a lighter note, I think that Sarah Silverman's actually really good in this movie. The scenes that she has are really funny, so much so you might pee on yourself. She does a good job of kind of lightening up what's otherwise a really kind of sad flick.
This I had just replaced. Like, this was actually in the spot of The Impossible until I thought of The Impossible. I'm glad you put it on here because I was going to talk about it a bit in my also rants anyway. This is a fantastic movie, and I've talked about it before. It feels real. Like, I know who Seth Rogen is. I know who Michelle Williams is. But at times, like, the way Sarah Polley directs it, it feels, like, voyeuristic at times. Like, yeah. You feel like you're watching this couple. And some of the dialogue is so natural in there. When she says, I don't even remember what she says because it makes no sense. And Seth Rogen's character, who's trying to be, like, the understanding guy, is just like, I don't even know what you're talking about. Like it's something so weird, but it's something that anybody that's ever had a girlfriend can understand, because it was just one of those, I wish I could remember the line.
We've all been in fights and arguments, and sometimes it's
they say something that to them makes perfect sense, but when you listen back to it, it makes no sense at all.
And in movies, it's always perfect. You always understand perfectly, and you always have the right eloquence to get your point across, but that's not life.
Yeah, and his line where he's just like, I don't even know what you're talking about. This movie is great. I'm a sucker for Seth Rogen. I do love Seth Rogen. Anybody who says he does the same thing in every movie or can't act hasn't seen this movie, because he's really good in it. And he is that lovable guy. And I don't like adultery as a plot device. Like, I generally don't like movies that rely solely on an extramarital affair.
Seems like a Showtime concept or like a Lifetime concept.
Yeah.
But in this, it's...
It tried to put you in the shoes of Michelle Williams and see where she was coming from, but I don't think it ever made her that you cheer for her. I don't think you were ever supposed
to. Go get it, girl.
Yeah, I don't think you were ever. It happens and you're still hoping for Seth Rogen, and then when she's supposed to go meet him, I think the closest you come to like cheering is just don't go. When you're supposed to meet him there, just don't go. But once she does, then you're over it. I don't think anybody watching that wants her and Seth Rogen together at the end, because it's kind of comeuppance in the way. Like, you had this, and you ruined it, and now you have nothing. We're spoiling the hell out of Take This Waltz, but that last scene between Seth Rogen and Michelle Williams, beautifully done. Very, very easy as a filmmaker, especially like a filmmaker in the earlier stages, like Sarah Polley, where she hasn't had a giant resume of movies. So easy to just, I hate your guts and I want to crush your nose, or whatever he says, and for them to get back together. Like, it's so easy. That scene reminds me kind of the end of another movie that I'm going to wait and mention in my also ran, because I don't know if it's on your list, but...
Put in the aspect of, like, the alcoholism, and then, yeah, okay, that's the catalyst that they both have to get on the same page and get back together, and it would be neat and convenient, but again, that's not life.
This movie's so good because it felt real. I talk so much about that. Is it my turn? I think it's my turn.
It is your turn.
My number three... Neighbors I liked because they were at that first phase of having kids and starting to accept that life is different now. My number three picks up a couple that's been married for a while. They used to have this wild and crazy life. You know, they had a couple of kids. They have a baby now. Like, their kids have gotten a little older. They've gotten older. They maybe can't do everything that they used to do. Until the dad kind of gets that itch and wants to kind of return back to his life. It is 2004, directed by Brad Bird, The Incredibles. Mr. and Mrs. Incredible, great on-screen married couple, because you do have that. They're living the suburban lifestyle. They're living they have two older kids and then a newborn now. So they were done with that and their kids are older and then now they have a baby. And then he gets the itch to want to be a superhero again. I just like that dynamic because we don't see a lot of superheroes with families. And that's one of the things I'm so compelled about Ant-Man, not just Paul Rudd, but
He has a daughter.
That's the first time we've had a superhero whose motivations are more than likely, you know, his family. And that's family that's still alive, I guess I'll say that. I like that dynamic and the fact that by the end they're all the Incredibles. It's not just Mr. and Mrs. Incredible. They are the Incredibles. It's just a fun movie to watch. And Craig T. Nelson and Holly Hunter, great performances because you do get that. You have him kind of hiding behind his wife's back and her kind of getting suspicious. I just really like the family dynamic of this movie, too, and I thought they were a great married couple.
It's a good family dynamic, and I'm a bit surprised it's taken us this long. We don't have a sequel, especially with the rash of quote-unquote superhero comic book movies now. That seemed like it was before the crest of that wave, and it was really, really good.
And I hope it picks up. I hope it's not just a sequel. I don't like when sequels take so long in between and then just pretend that it's all
the
fine.
Next day or like
I want to see the kids in their like mid-20s, they've moved on. Like, I want to see Mr. and Mrs. Incredible even older now. Frozone even older. And now you have the baby who's older.
Jack-Jack.
But
like
they still
smoking.
Have this younger child that they're taking care of while the others have moved on. So I hope it does have that time lapse in between to where it has been over 10 years. By the time we get a sequel, it'll be 13, 14 years. I want that to play a part in it.
My number two is at least our second movie from Nicholas Stoller. It is 2012's The Five-Year Engagement, starring Jason Segel, Emily Blunt, and Chris Pratt. Speaking of a couple laughs in a movie about the end of a relationship, observe Jason Segel's breakup with Emily Blunt. I don't know if this movie is actually as good as I think it is, but Dave says often that sometimes movies just come along at the right time, and for me, this was right movie, right time. And I guess like I'm getting to the age where a lot of my friends are either already married or they're getting engaged and stuff like that. And it's interesting to watch this couple that get engaged and then because life kind of happens to them, they aren't able to actually set a date and get married. But then you have this sort of storm that is Chris Pratt and Alison Brie, who happens to be Emily Blunt's sister, sort of just crash into each other, end up married. Everything just works out perfectly for them at the right time, in the right place, kind of almost by accident. And then you have these two that instead of kind of getting thrown together, they sort of start to drift apart as they're trying to figure out, do we need to be married? Should we be married? Is that what makes us happy? Or is that just because we've started on this path, that should be where it ends up going? I think we're sort of maybe on a lizard brain level predisposed to want guy to get girl because that is the best outcome. I did it in Blue Valentine. I wanted guy to keep girl. But sometimes, you know, that's not always the happiest outcome. Maybe the happiest outcome is that you figure out what makes each of you happy. And if that's not the two of you together, then it's okay. And I think that's what this movie does a great job of doing relatively early on in it.
My number two has pretty much the exact same thing, the same theme as yours, where you may fall in love and things go great, but it's not always meant to last. And maybe you fall in love with somebody who you're just not meant to be with. And that whole thing is explored in 2013's I Give It a Year, written and directed by Dan Mazur, starring Rafe Spall, Rose Byrne, Stephen Merchant, many drivers in there, Anna Faris, and Simon Baker, the mentalist. It starts off with Rafe Spall and Rose Byrne getting married. The whole theme is that first year of marriage is the hardest. It's about them after a year kind of growing tired of each other. And to go along with growing tired of each other, Rafe Spall's ex kind of shows back up. That relationship didn't end poorly. There's really no kind of closure. And then you have Rose Byrne meet Simon Baker, the mentalist, who's this really handsome, charming guy who has a lot more in common with her than her goofy, wacky husband, Rafe Spall. And this one's weird because romantic comedies, you're supposed to cheer for them to be together at the end. And that's a good theme about a lot of our movies, like Blue Valentine. Do you want them to stay together or do you not? Like, Take This Waltz, do you want them to take her back or do you not? Like, it could go either way. And this one is one of those where
you're cheering for them to be together, just not with each other.
Or are you? It's weird because you want them to be with somebody, but, and it's not predictable. It's done to a point where as you're entering that third act, there's a chance that they're going to realize like they have a good life together, or they're going to realize they can have a better life with somebody else. So it's weird because you don't know. Like, you go into this movie not knowing if they're still together any, you know, at the end of the movie. I don't want to spoil it because I do love this movie. I don't know if it's still on Netflix, but if you haven't seen I Give It a Year, please watch it because it's
give it a watch.
Give it a watch. It's fantastic because, I mean, Stephen Merchant.
I was going to say, if you're not sold after Stephen Merchant's best man speech,
fornication,
turn it off.
I mean, fornication. Like, this is Stephen Merchant at his best.
To quote Dave, at his Stephen Merchantiest.
And Rafe Spall, this makes me want Rafe Spall to be the lead in every romantic comedy. I would watch a lot more romantic comedies if Rafe Spall was the lead. He brings that perfect, quirky, awkward, him and Paul Rudd's
He's
character.
He's like a British Paul
you.
Rudd.
Yeah, him and Paul Rudd's character and I Love You, Man would be, I want to watch that buddy movie. But it's really good because you go into it not knowing if Rafe Spall and Rose Byrne are still together in the end, or if they go off with Anna Faris and Simon Baker, the Mentalist. It's just fun to watch. Like, I don't like the idea of marriages falling apart or like couple. I'm not big on adultery or anything, but this one takes it from a different angle, and I just really, really love this movie. It's weird to be one of my favorite movies about married couples is one where they both kind of try to stray, but it's a really good movie. It's one of the funniest movies I've ever seen in my life.
This is a very Dave choice to be on your list. I'm surprised it's not higher than it is, just knowing how much that you love that movie, which is why I left it off. But it's great. It's hilarious. Don't watch the trailer. I feel like they spoil, not necessarily spoil, but they give away some of the best bits, but it's still good even if you've seen it.
The electric photo frame scene, too much of it's
digital
in the trailer.
Frame,
yeah. Do not watch the trailer. That's one of the funniest scenes in any romantic comedy ever. In any comedy, like, I put that on par with the period dance in Superbad as far as like moments I've laughed the hardest. And that was in the trailer. So I knew that was coming.
Right.
And it still made me laugh that much. So don't watch the trailer. Just go watch I Give It a Year.
I knew that was on your list, but there's been a couple times when you've been describing your movies where I thought, oh shit, it's gonna be my number one. I was holding on. I guess I could have moved it around, but we talked about sort of realism, and not that I would know because I'm not married. I don't have kids. I don't know what it's like to be married with kids and 40, but I would assume that the most realistic depiction of that, and at least the most enjoyable realistic depiction of that, might be Judd Apatow's This Is 40 from 2012, starring the aforementioned Paul Rudd, Mrs. Judd Apatow, Leslie Mann, and the aforementioned Jason Segel. What I like about this is they don't seem like a movie or like a TV family. They seem very much, I don't want to say it's necessarily voyeuristic, but everything's believable. You could kind of see where everybody's coming from in this movie. And that's what I appreciate the most about it, is the fact that I think it's relatable for everyone. And I mean, watching rom-coms, a lot of times they're a bit more easily to relate. They're written kind of for women. And that's fine. You have some rom-coms that are, you know, the male version of. This one, I think, you know, if you're a guy, you're going to totally get where Paul Rudd's coming from, and you're going to watch the movie for that. I think if you're not a guy, if you're a lady, you're going to totally dig where Leslie Mann's coming from, and you're probably going to have felt many of the same things that she kind of goes through in this movie. There is conflict in this, but it seems like a lot of real-life sort of conflict that just sort of seems to keep piling up. It's not necessarily that they hate each other or one of them cheated on the other one. It's just kind of like a confluence of real adult bullshit, which is something that I think is going to happen in any relationship, whether it's a marriage, an engagement, a domestic partnership, common law, whatever. So I really like that this seems middle of the road. The wife's not naggy. The husband's not a dumbass. They're both like good, respectable people. I don't know that you necessarily ever think that, oh, fuck, this is going to completely come crumbling down. But you're rooting for them to just get past it because you know that they're supposed to be together. And you want to see them stay that way. I think it's middle of the road. It's honest. It's funny. And it's one of the few Judd Apatow movies that I don't think goes about a half an hour longer than it should.
My number one, I wouldn't say I enjoy this movie more than I Give It a Year, but I relate to it way more than I give it a year because it felt so real. It is from 2012, directed by Judd Apatow. This is 40.
I thought this was going to, I honest to God thought it'd be your number one.
It feels so real and it's way too relatable. I'm not 40 yet. I still have half a decade till I get there. And okay, I'm not married, but we have four kids in a house.
You
got to
have
so a decade
until
well
you get there too.
I'll be 40 before I'm married. but I mean, I relate to a lot of it. The poster is perfect. Just her brushing her teeth, him in the background taking a dump. You don't get any privacy. Him, my favorite scene is him going to quote unquote take a dump, and she goes in and he's just on his iPad. I do that all the time. I'll say I have to like throw down some dump just to go catch up on Twitter because I don't have any time, and I get caught all the time. It just feels so real because there isn't a villain. There isn't somebody to root for or cheer for. Like, yes, I could see how Leslie Mann gets annoying. I can also see how Paul Rudd might get obnoxious. But you could tell that they love each other. And that's just how life works. If you're with anybody for that long and that's what your life is, it's not all going to be perfect. It just isn't. But it's if you could take the moments that are perfect and accept that they're perfect, that's what it's about. And yeah, there's a lot of stuff to get between those perfect moments, but in the end, they're all worth it. That's why I love this movie, because it was such a real portrayal of a couple and of marriage. There wasn't the... When I saw Megan Fox was in it, I kind of thought like, oh, there's going to be something. No, she just worked there like...
Yeah, that's great. The way the scene with the flyers is carried off, like, that makes sense. Like, that seems real. Like, that would happen.
Like, it wasn't... You had a movie about a married couple that are kind of growing apart, but you did so without having some temptation there or anything. And I think that's... Nobody but Judd Apatow could make this movie. It starred his kids, it starred his wife, starred Paul Rudd, one of his best friends, as himself. So... That's why it's so real, and that's why it was just so well done. It's not a shocker that this is both of our number ones. So I wouldn't say I like this movie more than I give it a year, but I had to put it number one just because of how real it felt and how much I relate to it. So I definitely relate to this movie so much more.
And I relate to you relating to it. I think it's interesting that it did happen to be both of our number ones, as we are somewhat apparently married in the head as well.
Did you have any also-rans on yours?
They came together. Was one that I like an awful lot.
They were married in that.
I was going to say, I couldn't really remember if they were married, and I thought that if they were, that might be one that showed up on your list, so I didn't bother looking. It sort of like just jumped in my head as like, oh, that's a really cute story about like telling about how like this couple kind of meets. And
I have Jeff, who lives at home. We just talked about that extensively for, I think, the bro episode, actually.
Yeah,
I love the Ed Helms, Judy Greer relationship in that. I thought that was great. Date Night was fun. I mean, you put Steve Carell and Tina Fey in a movie together. One that I left off only because I assumed it would be on your list. It's not, but we've talked about it so much. True Romance.
Yeah.
And then I alluded to it earlier. I didn't mention it because I didn't know if you'd have it. Smashed. Talking about the last scene in Take This Waltz.
Yeah. Smashed.
I think
is
you
a really
saw where
one.
I was.
Yeah.
I think you picked that up. But
And we'd done an episode completely
on
Smashed.
Smashed,
so.
Yeah. And then Rabbit Hole. You talk about a downer. Who was that? Tom Jane and Nicole Kidman losing a kid. So, yeah, those are my also-rans. I know we missed some. This was the hardest one to do with. There's so many. So if there's a married couple on screen that you love that movie, let us know. moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, or Twitter @moviesonup. If you want more of me, find me @DaveBasella on Twitter, DaveBasella.com. Also, check out my other show, Daddy Issues. You can find that at daddyissues.net. It's Mike and Dave Have Daddy Issues. We actually put up a new episode a couple weeks ago, and then this week we're putting up a Father's Day episode. So it's just me and my friend Mike Kalinich talking about being dads and talking about dad stuff. So listen to it. Even if you don't have kids, I think it might be entertaining enough. But that's daddyissues.net. Also, check out podcast.com.
Next week, check us out. Not to be anticlimactic, but with Ted 2 hitting the theaters, Dave has somewhat snarkily decided that we'll give you our top five favorite, quote-unquote, most disappointing number twos.
Disappointing number twos.
That's probably favorite doesn't belong in there, but our five disappointing deuces. So until then.
Keep it up.